Welcome to the first edition of the PFA podcast. Fittingly, we start our first ever broadcast with a tribute to Harry Kewell, arguably Australia's finest ever footballer. Earlier this month, we celebrated his career as the Alex Tobin medalist for 2016. We will now share with you highlights of Harry's career, culminating in a wonderful one-on-one interview between Harry Kewell and Andy Harper. Enjoy.
I'm going to do my very hardest and hopefully bring Australia to the World Cup. I mean, hopefully we can put four past them and then hopefully I can score four of them. But, you know, on the day, you don't know what's going to happen.
1-0 up, the MCG simply going wild about Harry.
Well, after Iran, we were devastated. I'm not devastated, I'm sad. I'm very sad like everyone else. Perhaps it's time for us all, myself included, that we talk with our heart too much instead of our head and face the basics, that we need more influence to have more technical, to have 11 Kewells on the field.
Can it be Kewell? He's got a 10 shot. Kewell scores. Bounce
it straight back. Oh, what?
Reaches in the centre. Gerrard caught it two mains and fatally caught it two mains.
The ball is aimed by Wilcox for Kewell. Kewell one on two. Kewell goes for goal. That is one of the greatest goals you will ever see.
Oh, Kewell has got the better of Ferdinand. He's in for number two here for the Socceroos. Harry Kewell.
Through for Kewell. On goal. Harry with the keeper to beat. Oh, that is brilliant.
Chasing the through ball again. And he's got round the goalkeeper. Heskey's there with him. He went for goal himself. And who can blame him for that? Kewell has made it three. And opened his Liverpool account.
Kuss was great at delegating. He'd say, so give me the team. I actually put Popper out and brought Timmy in. After about 10 minutes looking, he said, no, we start Kewell on the bench. I went, my God, are you serious? So this was the day before the game. And he said, give out the bibs to the starting lineup. And I'm thinking, oh no, that means I don't give one to Harry. And he said, and don't tell him, don't say a word to him. And Harry put his hand out for it, and I didn't give it to him. I kept walking past. You see Harry's face, and I thought, oh. And Kuss said, don't say anything to him. And he said, and he's going to take us to the World Cup. Trust me. Harry came on and was fantastic that night. It was, hitting sat there with a smile on his face. It was like he's gone out there to show me.
It's all culminated in this quite incredible piece of theatre tonight. And the final act for both teams will be the lottery of the penalty shootout.
Harry Kewell is the man with the responsibility of the first one for Australia.
90 minutes in extra time. There's drama. We haven't seen nothing yet, folks. Here we go. It's Harry Kewell against Fabian Carini. First penalty, Australia. Goal. Here's Aloisi for a place in the World Cup.
Chorus. He moves in.
Yeah! He scores! Australia have got it!
Come on! Probably the greatest night of my life because we're in the greatest competition now.
Towards Kennedy. Might drop for Kewell! Harry Kewell has done it! Australia's golden boy has come up with a golden goal.
Harry Kewell swipes it home. Wonderfully done.
That's the ball again and again. Kewell hits. And Kewell scores. A special goal for Australia's special K. The Socceroos lead. Early release looking for Kewell. Harry Kewell. Harry Kewell has scored. Australia going again. Harry Kewell. Harry Kewell scores.
Now a chance inside the area. And the chance is converted.
Is this the moment for Australia? Kewell. 2-2.
And it keeps it alive. And Kewell. Brilliant from Harry.
Here's Kewell.
Harry Kewell.
It just had to be Harry, didn't it?
Thank you.
Thanks very much, Alex Tobin. Yes, we have. Do you want to check your microphone's going?
Hello, one, yep, two, three.
It's working.
Perfect.
That looks good, mate.
Thank you.
Where's it going to rank?
It's up there. It's probably, for me, one of the proudest moments because when you receive awards, I mean, it's a team event, you know, and it is a team event. And I would never have got to where I got to without my teammates, first and foremost. But again, to be voted by your peers, especially as an award like this, to go amongst the great players of Australia, it's fantastic. And I'm over the moon, honestly. I'm a little bit jet-lagged, just to let you know. But I feel, honestly, over the moon now.
Well, it's great to have you here. I mean, sometimes these things have to happen through video. I'm going to undo my shirt, my button, so the button doesn't flick off and hit you in the eye in the meantime. Yeah, sometimes you have to do this by distance, and it's so good to have you back here. And 1996 in Chile was referred to as your debut. And I just wonder at the time, or any time since, the first question a lot of people ask is, was there ever an interest from England? Because we've heard how you inspired Jamie McLaren. Alex has told you how you've inspired a whole generation. Did we know that? You also invigorated an entire country in England as a youngster. Were there flirtations from them to get you to play for the English national team?
Yes, they tried. They tried very hard. I remember the actual conversation with Paul Hart. He came over to me. I was playing very well for the youth team and all that, and I think he could have seen what was the future, technically. And he actually told me, he goes, have you played anything for Australia at the moment? And I said, well, I actually played the under-17s World Cup, literally. He goes, oh, okay, but is that, I don't know if that's actually acceptable, you know, at the first team, first grade level. And he says, we're going to try to put you into England. It came back to him. It came back and he said, you actually can't because of FIFA. It was a FIFA World Cup. He didn't actually ask me if I wanted to or not.
Right.
You know, he was actually just trying to push me in that direction to obviously play for England. But again, I'm a proud Australian. And I love the fact that, you know, when I went over there, I was Australian. And, you know, to go out there and show that we are good enough to compete at the highest level. And there was nothing better than for an Australian to get one over on the English.
Yeah.
And, you know, I did that quite a few times. And Mark helped me as well, and Brett as well. So we had a great, like, a lot of young players coming through at that age, like Mark and Brett and Jacob Burns as well. And we'll start to dominate over there. But, yes, they did try to get me.
So you weren't obviously the first Australian to go to Europe and play, but you've certainly had a bigger impact than many who went because of the way the English clubs reacted to you. As a youngster going over there, what sort of focus did it take from you to change those perceptions of English football people to Australian footballers? What was your level of focus?
I think it was just my drive at a young age. The one thing that my coach told me when I went over, he goes, learn to jump high and don't worry about what people say about you. You know, only really concentrate on what the manager wants. And I kind of literally just focused on that. And that's the one thing a lot of young players don't get. You know, they're caught up in this kind of media world. And I don't understand it, right, because your job is a footballer. But I understand that it's part of what it is now. But again, I mean, people can write some pretty amazing things about you, right? But they can also write some nasty things. And if you're a player that kind of reads it, you know, when you want to read the good things, then you've got to want to read the bad things. But again, I never really kind of read anything. I looked at the pictures, but never read anything because, you know, half the time...
Because you couldn't?
No, it's not that I couldn't. It's just that I wouldn't because I didn't believe what was written about me.
Yeah.
And, you know, half the time they're lies anyway. So I thought it best just to let the football do my talking.
And you talk about drive, and your football certainly didn't just talk. It shouted, screamed, sang. Where did that drive come from? What lit the fire for you? Because hundreds of thousands of kids start playing football and they all are going to play for Liverpool and Man United and Barcelona and Melbourne Victory and Sydney, blah, blah, blah. but a lot of them don't have the drive. What lit the fire for you particularly?
That's actually a very good question, because I get asked this question a lot, what drives you? And to be honest with you, I don't know. It's just
same
something.
Thing that drives you now? Have you got the same drive now?
Yeah, 100%. There's just that willingness to win, that willingness to go through anything, to do what I've got to do to succeed. Not afraid to fail. In fact, I enjoy failing because that's the only way you learn. And I think, especially in this day and age, a lot of kids are scared to fail. You know, they're happy to, you know, go 1, 2, 3, 4 times at someone, and if they don't go past them, they're like, I'm going to change or something. That wasn't me. You know, I kept on going and going and going. And you got to realize it only takes one moment in a game, especially for a forward, to get past his defender, and that wins you the game. So again, it's just in me. And you ask any professional player in here, and the desire to be the best is, it's just in you.
You know, so everyone's looked at your career with mixed measures of awe and envy and just an incredible journey. You know, but injury played a significant part, unfortunately. How close to your playing potential, if you were to sit back and really objectively say, I got this close to what I knew I could do, an injury stopped that, but how far off your very best do you reckon you got?
It's a good... I'd like to think I could have been the best. I had the ambition to be the best. You know, I've played with a lot of people in this room, you know, and they know what I was capable of doing on the pitch. But again, you know, I always kind of wanted to see in a mystical ball what I could have achieved. Because I understand the game. I could read the game. I knew how to get the better of my opponents. I knew that if, you know, someone was man-marked me, I could ghost down on someone else and completely take myself out the game, but I'll be taking two other people out the game. So I was a thinker. I would like to have known how far I was, but I believe my injuries, my career, has made me a better person, because unfortunately in the world of football, we can get carried away. Because as a professional footballer, you get everything done for you. There's nothing that you have to do. All you got to do is just wake up in the morning, get dressed, go to work, your food's on there, train, get a massage, go home, and that's your job done. You know, you have everything there for you. But when I was injured, I learned the actual side of actually being a human being. You know, finding out that, you know, everything's not done for you. You know, you had to kind of look after yourself in a way. So as much as I'd like to look in a crystal ball, I wouldn't change the way my career is, because it's actually made me a better person.
Is that perhaps because, having the desire to have been the best player in the world, you now want to be the best coach / manager in the world? Is that the drive now?
I dream big. And that's one thing I tell my players, one thing I tell my kids is, don't be scared of dreaming big, because it's the best thing about being young, you know. And even though I'm 38, I know I don't look it, but even though I'm 38...
Oh, speak to me, brother, speak to me.
I still dream. And, you know, I get asked the question, you know, do you want to be a coach? Hell yeah, I want to be a coach. Do I want to be at the biggest club in the world? Damn straight I want to be at the biggest club in the world. You know, do I want to manage Liverpool? 100%. Do I want to go to AC Milan? Yeah. Can I see myself on the touchline with a scarf on in the wintertime? 100%.
You know, or an Australian sideline with a tank top and a sweat beat.
There you go. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, whatever. But yeah, I want to throw myself out there. And I mean, I've got a long way to go. I see myself as an apprentice, starting from the bottom. I work at a fantastic club at the moment, Watford. I've got a great bunch of young players up and coming, and it's interesting, you know, to see how I grew up in the system to how they grow up now.
Right. So what are those differences?
Oh, it's chalk and cheese. And it's a shame, because the ability's there in a lot of them, but it's the attitude. You know, it's the way that we grew up. We grew up with respect. We grew up with a good work ethic. In this day and age now, especially the youngsters, how I've adopted them, they kind of think it's a given. You know, people kind of think it's, oh, well, I want to be a footballer. Yeah, I've got my first contract. Well, that's it now. It's done and dusted. No, it's not. It's only the beginning. You must fight every day for that jersey. And I give the example of Troy Deeney, who's our captain. And I say to like my strikers or to my players, I say, if you want that shirt, you've got to walk into that changing room. And you actually got to actually rip it off him. Because he's not actually going to give it up. You know, and then actually when you're ripping off it, he's going to actually have hold of it. And this is the determination you must have if you want to become a footballer.
So in the national poll that thrust you into Australia's greatest ever Socceroo, Huss Hiddink was voted the greatest ever Socceroo coach. And we just saw a brilliant grab from Arnie. I'm not sure if you'd seen that before. Had you seen that before?
No, I've heard about it.
Right, so Benny
Coonan. I've heard a lot of different kind of things about it.
So Benny Coonan did a fantastic television documentary on that qualification. In fact, Benny's been responsible for all these videos tonight, so cheerio to you, Benny. And so now, how do you respond? Would you do that to your star player? Given Huss Hiddink is, you know, this great coach, and the players coming through, we're told, you know, they take this bit from that coach and that from that coach. Is that something you'd take from Huss Hiddink?
100%, and I've actually done it already. I was in a tournament last
year. Did you
feel
like that at the time?
No. I was like, oh, my God, and I was asking my staff at the time, I was thinking, do I do it? And they said, well, it's up to you. You're the boss. You do what you got to do. So let me tell you a story. Last year, I was in a, last season, I was in a tournament in India. And I have a rule, don't be late. You know, I hate lateness. You know, I was never late. And I think it's just a rude sign. So one of my players was late during one of the meetings. No, for lunch. So I was furious with him. And as he's come in late, I've closed the door and I've left him. He's had to wait outside until everyone's finished eating. And then he could come in after we've all left and he could eat by himself because he didn't want to come on time. He had to actually eat by himself. And I didn't play him the next game. So I said, right, hopefully no one does it again. Coming up to the last match, which we had to draw to get through to the next round to the semifinals, my captain, my main player, and my left back, who's one of my main players as well, turns up late for lunch. I'm thinking, oh, God. What do I do? I mean, because he's my star player. And I'm thinking, and I need to go through to this next round. And I'm thinking, what do I do? And I'm asking, and I'm deciding, I've got days. I've got a couple of days before the game, and I'm thinking, honestly, you don't realise how much you actually think of a simple decision. Which actually, it wasn't a simple decision. Anyway, we're at a pool session, and I actually pull him aside. And I go, George, how you feeling? He goes, yeah, I'm okay, da da da. I said, you're not playing today. He goes, what? He goes, arguing and all that. I just said, you were late. I said, I can't have it. I said, what rule does that give to everyone else if you're late and I still play you? He goes, no, that's the wrong decision. I said, no, the wrong decision is you being late. All right, you put yourself in this position. And he's like, oh, come on, Harry, don't be. I said, it's done. He was upset. He walked away, got the left back in, Josh. Said the exact same thing. They sat on the bench, they're professional. We're struggling. Absolutely struggling. Half time I put him on and we won the game. So, but I had to make a point, and you know, the old saying in football, you know, you give a football an inch, you'll take a mile. And you have to really keep on top of them. And well, that decision there with Hiddink, as much as how it worked out, you know, I didn't see it coming. I knew, you know, I wanted to play, and you want to play in every game, but I think he made the right decision there. It was a big, big gamble. I actually heard that I was only going to come on around about the 60th, 70th minute. So for that little bit of what he did in the 30th minute was, you know, it worked well and, you know, it paid off.
So the yellow card to Popovic probably brought the whole thinking forward, but it had the desired effect. Have you got one of the best left feet that world football's produced? But the moment that Mark Bresciano scores that equaliser was your most horrible left foot execution ever. What happened?
I've done worse, and I've played with a few of the players, and they've actually seen
worse.
They've
seen worse.
You know, but, you know, it just goes to show, you know, you don't have to always, you know, things happen for a reason. Like I said, it's, people have asked me about that moment, you know, that pass, and yeah, it was an absolute shank. You know, it was a miss hit, misfire, But again, it's fallen because Bresciano was in the right position at the right time, and he's tapped it in. So again, for me, I've never been one of these people that needs to score goals. Do I love scoring goals? Well, did I love scoring goals? 100%. Did a lot of people, you know, chant my name? Loved it. But I preferred to assist because I believe that's a lot harder than actually scoring a goal.
That's a big call. That was a great team, very obviously a great team. How far are we from producing another great team like that? With the greatest of respect to the current team, which is the Asian champions.
I think that's the point, Asian champions.
Yeah.
I mean, as much as you talk about the from 2000 all the way up, we never won anything.
Yeah.
And you're only judged by what you win in the end. So for me, we're building. We're going forward. We're going in the right direction. Yes, we're going to hit little speed bumps on the way. Yes, we're not going to perform at our optimum all the time. You know, we're going to go to countries that obviously the pitch isn't great. You know, the weather conditions are not great. But again, it's something that these young players have to deal with. And I think they are. And I think Andrew's doing a fantastic job. Mm.
And last couple, Harry, to your job now, we don't get to see what happens too much with the Watford under-23s, although, you know, if you're that much of an anorak, you can find anything on the internet. So how is the team going? How your role as a manager now, your different relationships with the media as compared to when you were a player?
Yeah, I have to be a lot nicer.
You have to be a lot more diplomatic, I'm sure. But how is your team and how is your coaching career being received in England? What are they saying?
Well, there's a saying over in England, you know, with the under-23s, when you win, it's, you know, it's winning. When you're losing, it's all about player development. So at the moment, I'm going through a good stage of player development. Okay? But again, it's a very difficult age group because, you know, I have a small group. I only have 10, so I take 3 from the 18s to make 13. Sometimes I may get a first team and all that, but we're there as a backup to the first team. Mm. And if the manager turns around and goes, I want 3 players, he'll just take 3 players. I mean, I've been on sessions all the way up to training, and he's just come across and goes, I need a defender, I need a midfielder, I need a striker. And it just kills your session. Mm. So it's very hard to actually work on certain things. One, because I've only got a small team, but two, because the manager keeps taking my players. But again, that's something that we've got to, it helps me, because even though I have a small amount of players, I've still got to cover the basics in football. You know, make them understand the formation I want to play, make them understand the rules of what I want. And again, I just keep going through the basic things of football. I mean, I wasn't the most gifted player, but what I had, and again, I say to my young players as well, because you see a lot of skill in football this day and age, you know, because we're watching the likes of Messi, Ronaldo, Neymar, Suarez, and they do all the flicks and tricks. And I love that. You know, it's, you know, the showboating and all that. But when you actually put it down to football, and for me, Messi's the best player by far in the world. He's the most basic player you'll ever get in football. And people might go, well, what do you mean? He scores amazing. Goals. Yes, he does every now and then. But he actually gets the ball and gives it simple. Never gets caught on the ball because he's always playing simple. And that's what football is. It's all about playing the basics, playing it easy. And this is the problem with a lot of youngsters. As soon as they get the ball, what do they want to do? Take on 3-4 people, stick it in the top corner. Mm. You know, it's not football. You know, that's FIFA football. And that's what we call the young kids at the moment. It's like they're on the little games and, you know, they're trying to beat every single person where, it's, you know, you just play the game properly. And that will get you in good stead for when you actually do progress into a first team.
You talk about dreams, Harry, and you grow up a Liverpool fan and then you get signed by Liverpool to play in what was, I'm not sure if it's the same now, but the famous number 7 jersey. This is hallowed real estate. What's that like? That compared to qualifying for a World Cup, as a kid growing up as a Liverpool fan, to get the number 7 jersey made famous by Keegan, then Dalglish, you're the next big thing at the Kop. What was that like?
It was exciting. I mean, that whole period for me was exciting because You look to have a moment in your career where everyone, you know, wants you. And there's nothing better than a footballer when you're wanted by clubs. You know, you can sit there and lie on, but when people actually genuinely want you for your skills and all that, it's amazing. And I can remember sitting in the room with my agent at that time, family members, and we had decisions to make about what club to go to.
So what were some of the clubs chasing?
I had Barcelona, AC Milan, Man United, Chelsea, Liverpool, Arsenal, PSG, Bayern Munich.
Not bad for someone with not much talent.
Not bad. I had a good work ethic.
Yes.
Right. So I had a decision to make, and again, I did a video 10 years prior to that, and I got asked a question. You know, who are you? My coach, he goes, who are you?
Steve,
I said,
Jamal,
I'm Harry
was
Kuehl.
This? Was...
No, Oscar Gonzalez.
Oscar Gonzalez.
Yeah. So I was, he goes, what's your name? Harry Kuehl. What position? Left midfielder. He goes, who do you want to play for when you grow up? I just looked at Oscar. What are you doing, man? Look. Well, Liverpool line, that's the team we're going to play for. And, you know, 10 years later, I actually signed for, you know, my boyhood club. And it's interesting with the number as well. As everyone knows, I love number 10. You know, I always say the number 10 is the most important number in a team. And people go, well, why? You know, it's just as important as number 1, number 5, number 6. But I think number 10 is a number that every player looks to when the moments are tough. And that's why I liked it. But that was the only thing I couldn't get out of Liverpool was the number 10. Because I actually said I had number, and they actually said you can have any number except number 10. Because Michael Owen had number 10. So I had to suck it up in it, and I went for the iconic number 7.
Well, here we go. We thought this was this magnificent story of the mythical number 7 at Liverpool. It was your repercharge option.
Yeah, it was. I mean, look, if like... that option there, I had everything. You know, everybody wanted it, so you might as well just push for that little bit more.
Get on there.
And it didn't. But look, like I said, I loved Liverpool. I loved my time there off the field. I met so many amazing people. Obviously, on the field, I went through a horrific stage. But again, that's football. You can't cry over spilt milk.
Can you believe, I wasn't going to ask you this, but I will just quickly, can you believe how big the Liverpool thing is in Australia? When they come at the MCG and fill it to play the victory, and Steve Gerrard, take him at his word, says it's one of the most moving experiences because the Anfield's only half the size of the G. Can you do you have any sense of how big that was? It is.
Yeah, it's. I mean, the question is, who is the biggest club in the world? You know, they're talking about the money, you know, and obviously Man United, Real Madrid are up there, obviously. But when you look at a fan base, you know, I truly don't think you can go further than Liverpool. I mean. Scousers are everywhere, by the way, and Liverpool fans are not far behind them. I mean, they are absolutely everywhere you go, you will run into a Liverpool fan. So, again, there you go, see? They're everywhere. It's just, again, it's a club that has got great heritage. They're very passionate, the Scousers. Very loyal people as well. And obviously, they've gone through a bit of a rough time at the moment. But I think now with Klopp, I think he's... he's like a manager that I'm looking at the moment to see how he does, because I think he's a fantastic manager, and I think he will bring Liverpool back to its glory days.
Can you see yourself, behaving like Jurgen Klopp? He's very animated on the sideline, and we haven't come to expect that from you, but maybe that's part of your coaching.
Yeah, no, I'm very animated. I'm very passionate. Even at the under-23s, and the worst thing is that there's no fans there, so they can hear every effing blind word I'm saying at my players. So that's a little bit bad, because obviously we video it, you know. I'm shouting a lot at players, and then when I watch it back, I just go, oh my God, my players must just think, God, shut the hell up. you just do my head in. But again, no, I'm very passionate, and that little box thing does not contain me. I'm halfway down the line, still screaming, and I've got my staff turn and said, no, you've actually got to come back, Harry. I argue with the referees. That hasn't changed. I'll argue with the coaches. But I do say win, lose, or draw, I will shake their hands, and I'll make sure I shake every player's hands, because it hurts when you lose. Because as a player, if you ever see me lose, if you ever saw me win, no, I shook everyone's hand when I won.
That's right. But when you're losing, you're developing.
I went straight off.
Yeah.
I didn't want to shake anyone's hand because I was angry. But as a coach, I make it a point to I stand there and shake everybody's hand because I want to tell all my players that I'm pissed off of them because they lost. And I give them death stares as they walk by. And two, I just congratulate the youngsters because they've done well to beat my team.
Okay, so let's wrap it up. I mean, everyone's got their view on what you've left behind you. The PFA's acknowledged the contribution you've made to the playing body in general and acknowledged your career. And everyone's got their ideas on, you know, what Harry's done and how much he's excited and all those great images that were shown before. What do you look back on as your legacy? How have you left the place? And what are you most proud of? And what do you want to look back as been your imprint on Australian football?
I haven't left. I've just changed direction. So for me, the football side has kind of made a foundation for me. Now I'm going to build my house.
It's going to be a good one.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, please thank Harry Kuehl.